Hello everyone and welcome to JFG tonight. My sound settings are all messed up. Do you guys hear me? Because I have no way to check if you should hear me, if you do hear me. I think there was a refresh of my whole computer. Okay, so Val says I actually had the sound the first time through. Loud and clear, we hear distortion. Oh my god. Hello. Test. Well, you should hear me normally. Finest sound. Okay, so you guys are hearing me, but somehow I messed up my whole computer. Can hear a little distortion though. What about this? Hello? Hello? Yeah. No distortion. I totally opened up. I should never do this. I opened up my whole computer, deplugged everything. And whenever, of course, whenever you replug, you lose everything. The virtual soundtracks are all messed up. And so that's it. That's why I'm confused today. Let's set up the Discord because today is Ask Me Anything and there might be people calling. Oh my God. The number of problems I run into when I do these crazy things, I shouldn't. Hello, all right, so I should hear whoever calls in, and then I'll make sure that you guys can hear the callers. Here, aux input, that should work. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? Someone was asking about the Georgia Guidestones. I have no idea what this is. I've seen them quickly in the news. Some Guidestones. Some people have attacked the Guidestones with bombs. I don't know. Something. I have no idea what these Guidestones are, what they represent. I would have to read about the subject. But it didn't sound interesting enough for me to dedicate some amount of time to it. Nicholas Petris says, why did you unplug everything, blowing dust out of the computer or swapping components? I didn't say it, but it's a friend who had a old hard drive. And I was like, 1 hour before the show, I was like, do I do it now? 1 hour to copy an old 30 gig hard drive. I was like, probably there's not 30 gig of useful information in there. Probably the hard drive is not full, so I should have the time in 30 minutes to do it. But of course, it turned out to be an old hard drive. It had a very slow read speed. And so I ended up 20 minutes before the show and it wasn't even over. And I'm like, okay, I have to replug everything now because I have a show to run. Are U.S. gasoline refiners running out of steam? U.S. refineries have been operating at or near maximum utilization levels in recent weeks as demand recovers. Petroleum stocks are sitting at multi-year lows and refining margins are sky high. Refinery utilization at 95% is at its highest since before COVID. Yet refiners don't have much room to safely raise capacity usage further, while the summer season with heat waves and hurricanes could suddenly take some capacity off the market, further straining gasoline supply and putting upward pressure on gasoline price. But why was this so easy to handle under Trump? What is it that happens that you can talk about, okay, we're running at full capacity right now. I've never heard about gasoline capacity under Trump. There was just low price gas and everyone could buy it. What is so difficult now to talk about that we have to talk publicly about crap like refinery capacity and you're at 100% of what? You're at 95% of what? You're running your current infrastructure. Was there better infrastructure under Trump? You have to find the conditions, whatever they are, the technical conditions that existed under Trump and reproduce them again. One moment. All right. Tillman says, JF, the audio sounds good, but it is kind of popping. Maybe I was a little maxed out. Hopefully that works. It's very hard to come because these things don't retain their settings. So as long as I don't shut off my computer completely, I can keep the same settings every day. But when I shut off the computer, these things are all to be redone. Virtual sound processing, these freaking Behringer that don't retain their setting when they don't have electricity. It's a fucking mess. I hate it. I cannot believe that in 2022, we don't have a technology to retain the settings on a small memory card inside our hardware. What did they think when they did that? Like, they make these super hardware, 8 channels, all of the 250 different effects. I would just want 0 effects and a small memory card that keeps the settings in so that my voice doesn't change whenever I restart my computer. Same thing for the Logitech camera. Logitech cameras are great, low price stuff, and it's the best for internet computer streaming, but they haven't figured out how to keep the manual settings set in when the camera shuts off. Missing Erica Baker sends a CNN article. Video of Jalen Walker shooting leaves questions, outrage. Yeah, I never commented on this story because to me it's an unimportant story. Okay? The whole thing that the left has on this guy is he got shot 60 times. And the number of times someone gets shot as they die doesn't matter. The question is, was the shooting justified? And this guy was in a car. He had a gun. He fired his gun in the presence of policemen. And then he ran. But as he ran, and the policeman didn't necessarily know this, but as he ran, he left his gun in the car. And as he ran, just after shooting, he makes movements that make the police worry, and the police end up thinking, oh my God, he's going to shoot us, and they shoot him. And then what do we have in the left-wing coverage of this story with big titles on CNN and all these mainstream outlets? Unarmed black man gets shot 60 times. You can't make this up. Unarmed black man. It's like if you were to throw for 1 second your weapon in the air, you're not unarmed. You are armed, but your weapon was in the air for a certain moment. Same thing if you, without the police knowing, if you leave your gun in the car but you just used it, they will assume that you're armed. And it's total dishonesty journalistically to say he was unarmed. You don't fall unarmed just the moment you are not in skin contact with your gun anymore. So the shooting was totally justified. The police was justified in believing that this guy was dangerous. What is wrong with people not able to stop when a police tries to arrest them? Just stop. Just don't run. Don't make bizarre movements. They are trained to respond to someone who shows he is willing to stop. The alternative is you're going to get shot, especially if you have solid evidence that you've provided to the police that you were a deadly threat to them. George says, facts don't matter, it's 2022. The classical Justin Trudeau response, it's 2019. It's 2019. Silver Spider says, I heard this from a coworker. They shot an unarmed black man 60 times because he was black. Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable. But I mean, we've been talking about this again and again, and this country doesn't want to resolve this situation. This country doesn't want to face the problem that what's missing here basically is an education program for the citizens of America, especially in black community, to train them not to hate the police, not to consider that the police are there to kill them, and not to consider and to learn how is it that you handle peacefully an interaction with the police. We won't have this very soon, unfortunately, because the delusions of the left lead them to not being able to accept the fact that the behaviors like the one from Jalen Walker are the cause of their death. Too bad. Missing Erica Baker says, they say he worked at Amazon and would go to church. A good boy by all accounts. It doesn't matter. You can be doing all sorts of good deeds throughout the week. If you're in a car and you shoot a firearm in the presence of policemen, you are a deadly threat. You might still live if you can stop running like a fucking murderer. Just stop running, get arrested for whatever it is that you've done, and you're not going to die. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? If you'd like to ask questions tonight, use the Odyssey Super Chats. Odyssey is my favorite platform for Super Chats. It is the right place to support the show. Alternatively, you can also click on the Entropy link in the description below. Super Chats on Entropy are also awesome. If you would like to join the show, if you would like to appear live, I know that there was a guy who wanted to debate me the other day on the subject of Christ saving people from alcohol dependence. If you want to come discuss with me, that's the right night. It's an Ask Me Anything. To do so, all you have to do is join the Discord server. The link to Discord is in the description below. And join the waiting room. When I see people in the waiting room, I will slide them in the JF lounge whenever I'm ready to speak with you. Make sure that your earphones and microphones are well set up so that we don't have to wait for you to set them up. Tillman says, JF, he was going to be graduating pretty soon. I think you guys are trolling me at this point, but all of this is not an argument. Not an argument. The question when you encounter the police will only kill you really in one context. Well, two possible contexts. One, they have properly assessed that you are a deadly threat to them. Two, they have made an error and they have mistakenly thought that you were a deadly threat to them. Or they have made an error and have just shot you by error. Those are the two ways you can die by a policeman. And the category number one is 99.999% of the shootings. Literally, in the last years, death by police shootings, all of them, I have seen an argument for it. I have seen that there was a basis for it in the evidence. Silver Spider says, JF using the Stefan Molyneux argument, lol. Go away, says JF. Apparently Amazon is paying for employees' abortions. Is this exploitable? How many abortions can a woman have in a 12-month period? Well, she's going to have to prove that she's pregnant to benefit from this abortion ticket. So I guess it's going to be once a year. Max that they will be faced with. That being said, it is a form of exploitation, because see, men will never get Amazon to pay for their testicular cancer surgery. And so a thing that specifically affects women, they pay for. A thing that specifically affects men, they don't pay for. And so you find yourself with a skewed market where basically the woman is getting more money from the company than the man on average. She's getting a service that the men are not getting. So it is a very dangerous direction to take, because it is, You know what I would like? I would like a man who works for these companies to perhaps start a legal case and say there should be an opt-out for those people like me, a man who happens to be not pregnant. I want some of this cash because now basically what you're telling me is that these women are getting some of the money of the company. They are getting a compensation that I'm not getting. So you're doing sex-based discrimination. I would love to see this in the courts, possibly reaching the Supreme Court, and have a case that says, yeah, you can't do gender biased remuneration of that kind. Inside sends a super chat. Thank you so much for supporting the show. He says, JF, have you ever reviewed Super Intelligence by Neil Bostrom? He himself is kind of pop psy, but I have reread this one a few times and would love to know your thoughts, especially as this concept of super intelligence relates to TRP. There are parts regarding gene selection and breathing to produce SI, super intelligence. I have heard of this book. I don't think I've read it. Let me put it in my list here. I could do a show about this if it's anyhow interesting. Super intelligence asks the question, what happens when machines surpass humans in general intelligence? Will artificial agents save or destroy us? Nick Bostrom lays the foundation for understanding the future of humanity and intelligent life. The human brain has some capabilities that the brains of other animals lack. It is to these distinctive capabilities that our species owes its dominant position. If machine brains surpassed human brains in general intelligence, then this new super intelligence could become extremely powerful, possibly beyond our control, as the fate of the gorilla now depends more on humans than on the species itself. So would the fate of humankind depend on the actions of the machine superintelligence. But we have one advantage, we get to make the first move. Would it be possible to construct a seed artificial intelligence to engineer initial conditions so as to make an intelligence explosion survivable? How could one achieve a controlled detonation? It's interesting. I'll read it, but I have great qualms with this view of intelligence that obsesses with intelligence rather than replication, because all of these miss the evolutionary relationship at play here. When a superintelligence shows up, and to a certain extent it already has shown up, Google is there. You can take all of the computers of the world and claim it's one super intelligence machine. The problem is when it goes into the interface with humanity. There are some people who will not give a shit about your super intelligence. Will you be able to outcompete these people? Will you be able to outbreed them? Because right now what we have is that the technological elite that most enjoys interacting with computers has actually reduced birth rate. And so they're getting totally owned by, say, the Muslim social conservatives, the traditionalist Muslims who all they want in their life is have a wife, they live with the grandparents in the same home, and make 10 babies. In this context, and they want to interact with the super intelligence very much, and some of them, in fact, don't very much need computers, cell phones, they will interact much less with this. So the question is, what happens when a part of humanity doesn't care, doesn't engage with the superintelligence? And basically the superintelligence becomes kind of a great mind stuck in a local space of human society. It can only recommend stuff to those humans that believe it. And those humans that believe it, by believing in it, engage in a kind of leftist cesspool of crap that leads them to make less babies. So then we have to think a superintelligence that would be anyhow threatening would be a superintelligence that comes to understand this, perhaps, that comes to understand I must favor the breathing of those who are kind to me, those who listen to me. Now, how it's going to accomplish this and whether people will just be able to ignore it, that remains to be determined. It's very possible that a superintelligence wouldn't be able to accomplish this in the face of the way. Basically, we probably still evolve faster than the growth of the intelligence of the superintelligence. I'm not super scared about just intelligence in and of itself, because I mean there are plenty of geniuses lying around on planet Earth. Do you see them have any social success? Do you see them have blue check marks on Twitter? Do you see them dominating nations? None of this. So it's never been the case that intelligence is a tool of domination. Intelligence at some points in history was associated with better technological developments, and then other people than the scientist himself were able to use these technological advantages to gain over other militaries. So clearly intelligence can give you an edge, but it doesn't even give the edge to the people who are intelligent, and it won't give the edge to the intelligent super entity. Maybe it will serve certain nations well, who will eventually crush other nations. Maybe. But it's always overblown in these scenarios. So I'll read the book and I'll do a review of it. James is in the waiting room. Hello, James. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, JF?
I'm doing great.
Hey, so I've been studying the Russian Revolution lately. And I've been thinking about how, you know, how communism has this kind of world history inevitability to it, where it sees itself as inevitably coming from feudalism and all that sort of stuff. And I'm just thinking about how I find that very compelling, but in a way where I see like our almost like our past 4,000 years of human history and like in like almost deterministic domino type structure, one theory or one idea structure leading to another. And it's fascinating to think about all that sort of stuff. Like,
I'm surprised that you find this compelling, because I think the communists are wrong in even understanding the reason why societies converge toward communism. They think that there are intrinsic contradictions within capitalism, you know, a la Marx. They think, okay, these contradictions and the constant growth of monopolies will eventually lead to a revolution of the people who will take the means of production in their hands. But I don't think I think the communists are right in estimating that the world is converging toward more and more kind of a democrat socialization of everything. But I think they're wrong about the mechanism at play. It has nothing to do with monopolies, nothing to do with intrinsic contradictions of the capitalism ID. It's just a reality of masses of people and power.
Well, if you look at it from the Russian perspective, during the late 1800s, when the revolutionaries were fomenting their anger and theories, they were speaking against monarchist czarist Russia. And monarchist czarist Russia was, capitalism was seen as too left-wing for this environment. And so only after many years of concessions, Tsar Nicholas II adopted a prime minister, and then a prime minister that adopted some capitalist measures. And so there was this internal contradiction in the outmoded, like the old feudal structure of Russia that slowly gave way to capitalism, but then the communists critiqued this capitalism that only started for a few years and then went quickly into communism.
Yes, I have no doubt that that's the case. But does that tell us why Russia veered quicker toward communism? Well, USSR.
Well, I believe that they veered quicker just because they had less liberals in their country. The French, the British, all these other Western European countries were dominated by the liberal tradition of post-French Revolution, and they had a lot more. The liberals were moderates compared to the anarchist and communist of the day, because anarchism was almost just as popular as the communist back in those days. And
I agree.
It seems like they didn't have this middle ground in Russia that moderated, and they just had two polarizing viewpoints from feudalism and communism, and one had to win. And so that's why I believe that it went to communism.
There was not a well-funded business kind of opposition to communism. It was either a system of dictatorship or feudalism or communism. And so the opposition to communism didn't have the advantage that the business class has in Western Europe and America.
Yes. Now, we have a lot of similarities with some of the liberal tradition, because we have a lot of libertarian and capitalist principles, but yet there's many liberal agendas that I know that me and you do not agree with and find internal contradictions in. So I would say I stand outside of the liberal tradition, but yet some of its reforms are very beneficial, are true, philosophically true. And what do you think was... Do you think that the French Revolution and this whole liberal revolution, was it inevitable from the feudal structure? Did the feudal structure's internal contradictions, it's mounting, as characterized from the liberal point of view, inequalities and oppression have to inevitably result in the French Revolution and liberal blossoming of the 1800s?
I don't know. It's a very hard question for me to answer because it's too broad. The French Revolution to me is many things, and inevitable is probably too harsh of a word for this. I would say that it was inevitable that some degree of corruption would affect a leader class in any feudal system, and therefore, it was kind of inevitable that something else would show up to take power away from them, which they didn't deserve. That part is inevitable. Now, the French Revolution is both, as you point out, there are principles with which I agree inside of it, and then there are also principles that inevitably lead to democratization and controlled by the people and eventually socialization. So this particular recipe could have been different.
We're given like modes of thinking throughout history. Like there was the liberal tradition, communism in Russia, there was the feudalism, there was the Roman Empire that later became the Christian dominated ideology of the Roman Empire and the Christian ideology and morality of the people. We have these narrative structures that run throughout history, and yet we're told that the internal contradictions, at least in them, lead to the next. But I don't know. I'm just I'm skeptical of all of this because I feel like it's a bit of a simplistic way of viewing things. I know,
yes,
I'm doing a very broad
overview. I think
overview.
In general, it's not because a system is ideologically self-contradictory that these self-contradictions will come to play a physical role in its dismantlement. You could have something absolutely arbitrary, absolutely self-contradictory that guides a society, but it never turns out that this becomes the problem of that society. there could be other problems that come from non-contradictory parts of the ideological structure.
To bring it more to a base evolutionary level, if you think of, the different races, the Chinese, for example, and the East Asians, they lived in a oppressive totalitarian type structure for probably 2,000 years.
Yes.
And they never really had any revolutionary changes. And so if you bring it at that DNA level, it's linked to the DNA of the certain peoples of that area to bring about certain changes. And so it's linked to, well, what geography the people lived in that brought about those changes in DNA and a host of countless other factors.
Go away, says Jeff. We are re-entering feudalism now. Does James think this is inevitable too? I don't know. Are we re-entering feudalism now? We may re-enter it eventually, but I don't know that we're re-entering it now. We have very central, very controlling governments for our nations.
I would say feudalism is characterized by a strong authority and hierarchical structure, but decentralized, meaning there's tons of rulers. There's like rulers with hundreds and thousands of small little fiefs and castles throughout a country, or maybe when considering the Holy Roman Empire, just hundreds of countries within a greater empire. And so, no, we don't live in that at all. We're dominated by a one world ideology, liberalism, governed by a few elites that are follow a similar ideological system. So I'd say we're closer to communism, as you've pointed out in the show. And I fought back with that label for many years, but you've been convincing me that we are living under a communistic type world structure.
Yes, by everything but the name. Mark says, ants show that monarchy can work very well. Well, that I will have to push back against. I don't think that ants constitute a good parallel for human societies. Ants, they share all of the genes of their queen in the colony. So as such, they are more like a body and less like a society. The way you can organize human society must take into account that all human agents in your society are sexually competing with one another. It's a totally different world than ants. If there was a human society that works well under central authority like ants, it would have to be a human society where there is no reproduction, or where reproduction is so controlled that it's basically out of your control. That doesn't work for humans.
Well, are you mixing up the term queen, like the way you spell it in your book, and then the actual queens of the monarchies, because they actually didn't reproduce like all the babies in the empire? But I don't know. I have a lot of things that positive to say about monarchy, though, because it has a possibility to fail and topple over because it's ruled by one family that can be gotten rid of. And liberalism is kind of like this structure that can never be taken rid of. It's like self-perpetuates no matter who's there.
That's true. That is absolutely true. And so the only problem with monarchy is that there is an inevitable time at which the aristocracy becomes unfit to give the proper rules, and so it must be reverted, and this involves a lot of losses and investment of energy and risks and societal instability.
Isn't that the best we can do as a society? I feel like there's so many ideologies, like communism, anarchism, all these philosophies look for the ideal, and human societies are so messy that you can only have instability and all of this sort of stuff. And even with libertarianism, I love it, but you almost always get dominated by a large military force that wants to take over your area because you're not centrally controlled. So if you have a monarchy, it you can get a horrible ruler, but at least you have the possibility of having a one-person ruler that has a strong central vision. That can never happen in democracy because it's always a rule by the mob, and the mob is always the lowest common denominator.
Yes, I agree. As far as libertarianism, I mean, the problem is people keep saying this, JF, I will invade your libertarian country and win within 24 hours. But the problem is, this is not a good reasoning to justify authoritarianism in other domain than military recruitment. You could very well say, okay, we have to have a military, so be it. But I'm not going to give full power over my individual life, including medical decisions and all sorts of other liberties, to a central commander just because of that. We could very well have a libertarian society that says, we're libertarians, except when it comes to army recruitment, because we have to give it our all, and in that domain, we are authoritarians.
I've argued that position many times, and I want to agree with you, but let me do some pushback, because I can think of during the First World War in Russia, when the Tsar was, and then later on in the Second World War, the Bolsheviks and the Communists, they were facing a losing war, and they had to take resources from the peasants to feed their army, or their army was going to disintegrate. So they had to take control of the economy, command control it, or they weren't going to get the physical resources to continue the war and win. And communism, during the Second World War, it looked like it was going to fall, but somehow they took everything from the people. Millions of people, millions of their peasants died, but it actually worked out for them, and they actually did win. So it paid off for them in like the winning structure of the war.
Okay, but what if we were to say, all right, all we need is a system that can do that to win wars, but we have to have a mechanism that finds the end of wars and that returns the powers to the people.
A kind of subversive talking about like ideas and philosophical undermining of all the mass population and getting them to question the authority structures, and so they don't consent to the authority structure and kind of revolt against it. Is that what you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about more like a constitutional mechanism. Where, okay, if we decide that somehow someone, maybe a leader, maybe everyone, decide together we are at war and we have to sacrifice our liberties, but all we have to do is, okay, a mechanism that every year we check, are we still at war? Do we still need to take over all these central commands? And eventually a mechanism that guarantees that liberty will be returned to the people once the war effort has been satisfied.
I mean, that was the Roman Republic of the city Cincinnati, and the United States is named after the guy that was named dictator of the Roman Republic and was dictator of Rome until the war was over. And they were worried that he was going to stay dictator for life and control the entire Roman state. But he gave up all his powers and then went back to his small little farm and farmed for the rest of his life and gave back the power to the constitution of the Roman Republic. And so he's like the ideal wartime dictator that Cincinnati is named after. So
yes,
that would be
your
ideal
man. Of course, the big
man.
Danger of such systems is someone will decide that we're always at war. But you could have also checks and balances against that happening.
Well, how do you have checks and balances if you name a dictator and he has, if the most important thing is, the most efficient thing is one man able to control and be most fast and efficient at controlling things without checks and balances, the most efficient system is a dictatorship. But you would have to give up some of those efficiencies for checks and balances. And so therefore, you'd be less efficient in war. And maybe a country that gave up those efficiencies could beat you in war temporarily. And maybe. So I'm just thinking it's not the ideal system for all circumstances.
But there has to be a meta system that includes all of these possibilities. A meta system that say, okay, we're going to give the power to this guy 5 years, 10 years. There's going to be a number of years where wars don't last that long and where no competing nations will ever sustain a war effort that lasts more than 5 years or more than 10 years. And whatever that reality is, we can look at it from a factual perspective, an empirical perspective, and set the system so that it wraps and encompasses all possibilities.
I'm completely... I have no faith in a constitution that can constrain any type of man, because I just look at, like, Caesar, for example. He was given these constraints. Like, he had a term as a proconsul, and it was a very strict, well-defined system. The Roman Republic is well known for these many-layer structure and strict term limits, but he gains such a strong military force by winning so many victories in Gaul, and so much popularity by bringing so many slaves back to Rome and so much money to them, that he was able to bend and break the system just through the money and wealth and bribes he gave to everyone throughout all of society just through his military victories.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm trying to make an enthusiastic case, but I'm just like you. I think that it's going to be very hard, and constitutional reforms alone might not suffice. They might keep us out of trouble for a little while or a long while. Ultimately, I believe it's perhaps good that there's always the possibility of a crazy guy random in society having the ability to kill the dictator and take over and basically seed a moment of chaos in the society so that it can have a chance at reorganizing itself.
Yeah. I guess if we just need to look at ourselves like the evolutionary beings that we are, we're animals that seek power and all of these things that are inborn into us. And you just have to recognize these truths about ourselves and accept these flaws and states in society. And I think the problem with modern society is we have so many of these, fanciful and grandiose notions of how all of society and governments and structures are supposed to have all these rights and protections and all of these things for the people, when at the end of the day, they never provide any of these. It's always imperfect. And I think these, like, hope is one of the most dangerous things anyone can have, is that's why I think it's useful for me and you to be like a nihilist in a lot of ways, because hope can destroy you in a lot of ways. And I think hope is destroying the world right now.
Absolutely. The society is a false promise, because you read all these principles and you get taught about it in elementary school and you think, oh my God, I'm good to go. I'm protected. People are never going to discriminate against me. And then you learn, oh, well, you know, our anti-discrimination laws, they don't apply to white male. And so a first disappointment that you reach in adulthood is to realize that these systems have not been designed for you, and they are not what they claim to be. Go away, says Jeff. What if we are at war with a virus like COVID? Same rule apply or no? No, I would certainly not give a dictator power for a war against a virus. I think that's ridiculous.
And especially one that had such minimal effect as COVID. And but yet people have demagogues in the population that strike fear into people's hearts and then take control. And that's just the story of history. But absolutely. Anything else you wanted to talk to me about? But that's all, kind of all I had.
Okay, well, nothing in particular. Bayes is quoting John Adams, who says, our constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. Yeah, but that's always the problem. All of these theories of politics, they all rely on somehow the system having good faith, and it's basically impossible for human systems to keep good faith for any long period of time. Corruption shows in inevitably.
What was that quote from Thomas Jefferson? A republic, if you can keep it. And he also said that the tree of liberty is watered with the blood of martyrs. And he thought that America, to remain a republic, would have to go through revolutions every generation or so. And if it didn't do this, it would stagnate into an authoritarian structure. And I mean, has this ever been a more prophetic statement?
Absolutely.
About very much. It's
because
very prophetic.
We're at the very end of the republic, where basically we weren't able to keep it. And so it was taken over by democratic left-wing forces, and there's nothing we can do to recuperate it other than a complete redo of the system from scratch.
Yeah, it's amazing that we still call it the United States of America, because it's a complete inverse to its founding principles. So it's almost like the sick joke that we use the same name for it.
Well, it depends on if you want to focus on states as having sovereignty and independence, or united. Just how united do you want your states to be? That's the view, basically, of the Democrats, who think the same federal law should apply across the nation.
Oh, yeah, like your current talking points lately on abortion, where you're talking about the emphasis of states' rights, which I can applaud. It's very cool to see how the emergence of states' rights is going on with this abortion topic, because I could really care less about the abortion issue at all. It's such a meaningless thing to me. I could care less whether it passes or doesn't pass. But I am encouraged to see the promotion of states' rights. But over such a meaningless topic, I hope that they would do something more meaningful. But
yeah,
who knows?
That's the game being set for eventually having two different educational programs in America, one for leftist, one for right-wing states. And so that's why I'm enthusiastic about it. But just like you, I don't care all that much about abortion. So how have you been doing, James, this summer?
Oh, been doing good. I've been just really enjoying, getting my hands dirty, working a lot this summer. And I've been listening to this. I have time at work to listen to audiobooks and podcasts the entire time. So I've been listening to this podcast, The Revolutions by Mike Duncan. And it's been a 100-part podcast about the Russian Revolution. And I'm trying to become an expert on it, because I find it fascinating, and I'm getting better and better at understanding it. It's very influential for understanding the history of the Western world.
But there's one problem. You don't want to be deceived into thinking that this is the only way in which a communist system installs itself, because the way the American communist revolution happens is much different than the Russian one.
Well, how so? What do you mean by that?
Well, the Russian Revolution happens, if I understand correctly, it's basically an overthrow and a takeover that's physical, that appears. It's an event in history. Whereas the American Communistic Revolution is a progression through the institutions, through the systems of academia, politics, law. And it's a takeover that's more subversive, that spreads over decades. It basically stems back from the days of anti-communism, McCarthyism, up to now. It's a very slow process.
Push back a little bit. I think your view of the world is a little bit too nationalistic, nation-focused, where each nation has its own separate history that follows its own timeline. I feel like the history of the Western world, especially the last 200 years, has been completely interlinked. And especially when I've studied the communist and Russian revolutions and the whole liberal revolution of the since the French Revolution. They had these international chapters. Many of the Russian revolutionaries would live in Britain at times, Switzerland at times, Spain at times, France, Germany, many countries, and they would foment revolutions in those countries. They would work at some times. They were equally pushing for these revolutions in all of these countries everywhere, America, and they took off in some countries than other, and they obviously took off very well in Russia. But it doesn't mean that they weren't everywhere at all times pushing the exact same agenda. And I think
very
that
interesting view.
The ideologies were just a one Western world permeation throughout all of it for the past 200 years.
All right. Bez says, could we not make a blockchain-like structure which is open source to impose a fractal direct democracy or localism, as Taleb calls it? If not something else, would it be a bad idea to beat the technocrats to the punch? Are there adequate safeguards to these problems? Fork subversions? Well, the whole idea of direct democracy, like fractal direct democracy, I would like it in the sense that, yeah, you only have an impact through your vote on how the things that concern you eventually change your life. So you don't have the right to impose a law onto someone who's distant from you, who wants to do something. If it concerns him, it's his thing. Now, the idea of taking the blockchain to do this, that's just a method to me. And the method doesn't really matter. And this is not a promise of the blockchain. And the blockchain will have, like any other methods, weaknesses to it and advantages. But the problem is not so much finding the right method for this. It's that people don't even want fractal direct democracy. They want to rule over others on average, and so they wouldn't take a system where you only rule over yourself and where little groups rule over little groups. They want full control and centralized control. That's the problem you're faced with. Whether you solve this with blockchain or something else, the problem is that people reject this.
Yes. I've been trying to dissociate mentally from the blockchain lately after losing too much money on Bitcoin. So I'm trying not to think about it. So I'll just ignore that.
Lost money on Bitcoins? You bought too late?
JF, we're not talking about this. I'm trying to ignore it.
Okay.
No, I just sold. I just didn't sell at the right time.
Okay. Well, you keep your Bitcoin like I do, and we'll wait for the next bull run. It keeps happening, so it's not like it's a big mystery whether it will happen again.
Yeah. I mean, I'm hoping. I'm skeptical if it will happen again. I'm leaning toward it will. Like the 4-year cycles will continue, but I don't know. This world is crazy, and I could see how you saw how like the metaverse and all of these strange, no purpose cryptocurrencies have exploded everywhere over the last few years, and I'm just worried that they infected the space so much that it tainted cryptocurrency in people's mind so much that people will never give cryptocurrency a chance after how much they tarnish the reputation of it.
It will all get washed away, but Bitcoin will remain, I'm sure. Bitcoin, ETH are safe bets, I would bet, for the future.
I hope so.
All right, James, thank you so much for calling.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Always good to speak with James, who is always every month present in our private Patreon hangout, always driving the conversation. Very interesting guy. Silver Spiders and $10. Thank you so much. He says, hey, Jeff, I've been trying to convince my coworkers that CERN will not open a black hole that will destroy the Earth. Nobody believes me. One guy even thinks they will open a portal to hell. Is it even worth trying to convince these people? Well, I don't know if you've heard my view on this 3 shows ago, approximately. But my view is that I don't know if it will be a black hole, but I think CERN should stop fucking around. They're playing with enormous energies. And eventually, I'm pretty certain we're going to reach energy levels that become dangerous in some way. I don't know if it's going to be a black hole or something else, but I would stop these experiments. So I'm not the right guy to ask how to make a case that CERN will be always safe. I don't think it will be always safe. You know, there could be unknown physics, you know, there could be levels of energy unleashed at certain degrees of collisions and speeds that become dangerous in some way. The danger could be not perhaps civilizational, perhaps we're talking about just loss of control of a particle and it kind of creates a laser that zaps through the earth and maybe kills 10, 20 people on the other side of the earth. I don't know, something like this. But it could also be much graver. It could be like, oh my God, we didn't know, but more than nuclear energy, there's this other type of energy, and we just unleashed it, and somehow 0.1 gram of matter has been unleashed into a massive explosion that chops the Earth in half and kills everyone. We can't exclude this. So I'd be very careful with CERN, and I would say there is a kind of wisdom in your co-workers. They don't know what it is. They're probably calling it a black hole without understanding exactly how much of this is possible. Like a black hole, you would need, with the masses that they're working on, a black hole probably wouldn't even be dangerous if it existed for an instant. The problem is, a black hole of super small mass, as it can basically pass through the Earth and you wouldn't notice. And so they call it a black hole, but what I see in your coworkers' perspective is that they are just scared about the unknown. And they're right to be. We should be much more scared about the unknown than we are, but we are an unadjust civilization. We have overshot our curiosity because the world has always been rewarding us with curiosity. The world has always been better for those who were the most curious, and science has always delivered better results for the engineers that did care about how do we actually build a bridge and how do we actually build a plane. But we will reach the end of this, and someday our curiosity will lead us toward destruction. Silver Spider says, JF, I read a book recently by Don Lincoln, one of the founders of the Higgs boson. Founder? That's a weird name to give to a boson. But in order to open a dangerous, sustainable black hole, we need to make CERN 1,000 light years long. But I can see how those other things are possible. Yeah, exactly. So again, a black hole, I don't think is the danger, because I think that we master enough the physics of black hole, you know, roughly, to say I would know at which level of energy a black hole becomes dangerous, and we are many orders of magnitude below this. But you cannot exclude unknown physics. You know how we say that matter as we know it constitutes only a small percentage of the universe, and most of the matter in the universe is, well, most of the energy in the universe is dark matter and dark energy. What if we start tapping into this? What if in the beam of the CERN there happens to be a mass of dark energy, dark matter in there, that is unleashed in an uncontrollable way? We don't know the physics of dark matter and dark energy, but we may discover it by accident, and that accident may very well be simultaneous to our death. Lakshad sends a super chat, thank you so much. He says, hey JF, I'm sad I missed the live stream yesterday where you spoke on Young Lean and Sad Boys. Crazy to see some SB/drainers viewing the best show on the internet, JFG Tonight. Could Cremo have learned anything from the values of Meerkat Society to save him, Meerkat Gang, forever? This guy is obsessed with meerkats at all time. Can we use the value of meerkat society to fix school shootings? I guess it's not such a crazy proposition. We might be able to. We could teach to people that meerkats, with their division of work and their viciousness in the eye, they get together, and despite their ugly nature and the uncertainty that you would experience looking at them, perhaps there is a common ground that all of the meerkats of Meerkat Society find together. But here's the thing. The Meerkat Society lesson wouldn't be to the shooter. It would be to the rest of human societies. Because meerkats I don't know that they reject a member of their family. And I don't know that they oppress men, young men. And I don't know that they create situations in which there is no hope for young men. So perhaps the lesson from Meerkat Society wouldn't be to the shooter, Krimo. It might be to the rest of civilization. Go away, says JF. I think we will be fine as long as we don't move CERN operations to Wuhan, China. Oh yeah, I mean, don't give it to the Chinese. They've not shown their ability with the viruses. I don't want them with a CERN beam, okay? Horse Feathers says, JF, I got swabbed and my test came back positive. I have a case of climate change. Pray for me. Normally, it's a psychiatric diagnosis. Like, there's such a thing as climate change obsession or something. I don't think you can get swabbed to prove that you suffer from climate change. Mark says, JF, did you have any more success with the cipher? I didn't. And I'm in contact with the guy in our audience who's been who's a professional of that kind of things, and he's stunned just like me in front of the cipher and all of the evidence that we gather, and he's been working a lot on it, and I've been working to some extent a little more. But all that it's pointing to, what we discover, is this is a complex code that will not be easily resolved. Like, it's the kind of code that if you knew, it would be just like this. If you knew exactly what he did, it will be easy with hindsight. But there is no structure, no easy way to detect what he's done. This guy has been shuffling this shit with not random numbers. There's something wrong with this code. It's been multi-layered, multi-ciphered, and to the point where like the thing is, I approach this cipher and I'm like, I'm gonna find the most common character. It's gonna be a space or an A or an E, you know, the most used letter of the English language. But the cipher is encoded in a way that there's not even repeating patterns in there. The most repeating pattern in triplets using all offsets repeats 10 times. I think there's one that repeats 14 times. But 10 to 14 times. So you're going to tell me there's a whole page of this book, and whatever character that repeat encodes appears only 14 times. And so this little fucker didn't even include spaces in his text. And as Plasma was pointing to me when we were discussing this, he's like, all madmen's manifesto do not include space. Okay. But then, you know, the other possibilities are so spread out statistically that it leads me to believe none of the patterns that we can observe in that book encode characters directly. So they must encode it indirectly. So we have to know exactly which algorithm led to this, because it's not easily detectable. It's not simple substitution. That's where we are, and personally, that's as far as my intellect is capable of bringing me. I don't think I will be able to work further on this deciphering. It's just at another pay grade than mine. We need professionals of ciphering, and we need them to dedicate a lot of time and thought on this code. Go away, says JF. I think Ryan Dawson was right. We know that Cremo used a Mac, which means he doesn't have a numpad on his keyboard, meaning if he was typing random number, he was using the row at the top of the keyboard. Someone who manually types random numbers like this doesn't come out with the statistics that I'm seeing. There would be enormous repeatable patterns. Like, you have no idea how much humans are bad at generating actual random. I don't believe it, let me tell you this, because a human who tries to type randomly on a keyboard will basically have 5 or 6 repeatable patterns, and it's going to be all that there is throughout the text. It's going to just pop on an analysis super easy. I don't think that's what we're faced with. We're faced with an algorithm that somehow spreads out and maximizes the use of various numbers. It looks like hyper compressed data almost. Based says, JF, the people don't want it. Maybe this is giving people, most of which are in follower mode, too much credit. Blockchain potentially gives you the incentive structure to want it, though. So could this be a build it and then there will come situation? People are moving to countryside increasingly. I mean, you could start a small community based on your principle and see how that grows. I think that small communities in our nations, other than the Amish, I don't see this being successful. You know, communities that work on principles, like the Amish survive because they don't work just on principle. They work mostly on reproduction. But to have a principle-based society, the problem is that even if it becomes any big in any way, you're going to experience the full force of the rejection of modern society. They're going to cancel you. They're going to go at you with the whole book of laws, and they're going to find you guilty of something on your land. So I don't put much hope in ideological projects, because I know that they have no way to survive intergenerationally, maintain growth, and maintain, if you will, a proper defense against the aggression of surrounding society. Because these three characteristics, the only thing I know that can do that is life. So you have to be a family. A family is a unit that survives intergenerationally. A society with principles, a city with a code, none of this survives. Based says, seeing that page JF posted, it was obvious it's not gematria or numerology. Lol, first you must crack / apply whatever this is. Exactly, it's an encoding that is computational in nature. Raised Fist says, JF, a human who has something important to say types it in a known language. You're right, and I'm not fascinated about deciphering this book, because I think that what's in it is important. That's a very important distinction. I'm not that much interested in the content. I'm interested in pursuing my passion for delivering an empathic receipt of events. And to me, whatever it is that this guy wrote in that book is part of my responsibility as a journalist to discover, if I can, within the means of the possible. So that's why I'm interested. I think that it's not going to be genius what's in there. Certainly not. I don't expect this guy. And by the way, here's a picture of him appearing at the jail because it was a Zoom call jail. There he is. I thought originally that he dressed as a woman to escape the police, like as a strategy. That's what I said yesterday. But it looks like from this picture that he may be identifying, at least in the feminine spectrum. He looks very feminine in the way he presents himself. Or perhaps that's just the fact that in jail he didn't have much access to preparing himself as a guy, and he was already prepared as a woman for escaping the police. I don't have any idea. But what he wrote in his book, to me, it's my responsibility to find it, if possible, because I want to understand. I want to understand how his mind works, how people reach this kind of behavior. Silver Spider, so, and also I want to shut off. There's a really base level, terrible interpretation of these events by leftists, which is, oh, he had a Pepe t-shirt, therefore he's an alt-righter, and he was a Trump fan. And that is so missing the point of who this guy was that I think that finding the answer in the book could at least provide closure to just how wrong this interpretation of the events are. Silver Spider says JF using his superpowers to solve crime. Well, I've been unsuccessful at this. Highland Park, 4th of July parade attack. Are parents of alleged gunmen culpable? They discuss on Fox News whether there could be responsibility because his father signed, because getting a weapon apparently in Illinois at this age. I think he got the weapon at 19 years old. And because you're not 21, you need an adult to sign your card of, I don't know, some kind of club that makes you able to buy the gun before 21 year old. And his father had signed that card. He had signed that card after knowing that his son had threatened to kill everyone with his knives and his sword. So there might very well be lawsuits against his father. Personally, I'm against these lawsuits. I understand that a lot of people want to find guilt everywhere, to find a scapegoat, and they might very well succeed at doing it with his father. But personally, I don't think it should be the responsibility of the everyday citizen to basically act like police toward their own children. I think we should consider in our legal system that there is a genetic kinship that is as strong. Our legal system actually recognizes this for husband and wives. They will give, for example, the right to against self-incrimination for a husband so that he doesn't have to incriminate his wife. I think the same should apply for father-child relationship. Unfortunately, it doesn't apply. But I think basically we should consider the family unit as bound by the same forces that bound a single individual. And that if we were to expect a single individual not to self-incriminate, we should not count on fathers to somehow police the capacity of their own child at benefiting from their Second Amendment rights. That is my view on this, although I think society is converging very different from my view. And more we see these lawsuits against the company that sold the gun, against the father, against the people who were close to the shooter. I think that's nonsense. Supreme Court decision on abortion to have net neutral impact on midterm voting. I predicted this. I predicted this a couple of days ago. I said, you know what? Although the leftists are trying in mainstream media to push a lot on the Roe v. Wade cancellation, it's not going to affect voting because there's going to be equal parts of Democrats who were kind of annoyed at abortion anyway, and they don't quite want to stand publicly and or make it a case that changes their vote. And you're going to have some Republican just happy about it and perhaps even more motivated to vote Republican. And the survey reveals exactly this. An equal percentage of respondents, 36%, said they were more likely to vote for a Democrat as those more likely to vote for a Republican in the midterms. So there's an exact same number of people who are telling you, oh yeah, it makes me want to vote left. Then there are people who say, no, it makes me want to vote more right. So in the end, you have a net neutral effect, as I predicted. Callum Oxworth says, it would be interesting if you could do a stream trying to decode the final CIA cryptos cipher. I'll put it in my bookmarks, but as I pointed out, you know, there are definitely people better than me at this. I should say, when I said yesterday or 2 days ago that, you know, if anyone can do it, it's me in terms of finding the shooter code for his book, I meant among the people interested in finding the cipher. The reality is there are people around the earth much, much more knowledgeable in the domain of deciphering than me. I'm just a guy with some scientific knowledge and a great passion for mysteries and some understanding of the mathematics involved. Go Away sends a super chat. Thank you so much for supporting the show. He says, should we implement a buddy system for firearms where everyone of all ages who purchases a firearm needs a third party to sign off, and that third party will be culpable if that firearm is used in a crime? Instead of feds trying to find the crazies in society, society will self-regulate in this sense. No, that's ridiculous. Because first, well, this is discrimination against autists. Like people like me have no friends. There's no one who could sign off on my little card. Secondly, you know, people are not particularly insightful about whether their friends deserve a weapon or not. Thirdly, what would be the incentive for someone to sign away their right, basically to potentially be found guilty of murder? And so no one would want to sign this. You'd be crazy if you wanted to sign this. And also, it would violate so many principles of law. Well, first, the Second Amendment shall not be infringed. Well, you're infringing there. You're infringing for sure. And secondly, mens rea. So you could be found guilty of a crime that you didn't plan, didn't want, and didn't even do anything for it to happen. How do you find someone guilty of murder to have the conscience of a murderer, and yet this person has not pushed the trigger, has not taken any action for the murder to happen? Now, that's absolute nonsense, and we have to stay away from that kind of model. BJ Beige is on entropy. He says, why do people keep calling it 4th of July? It's Independence Day, isn't it? Yes, it's on the 4th of July, but that's just the date. We don't call Christmas day 25th of December. Yeah, I don't know. 4th of July happens to be a small month, July, that's four letters. And so I think it's a case where Independence Day is actually longer to say and longer to write than July 4th. If Independence Day happened in September, I would bet that we don't call it the 4th of September. And let's say it happened on the 23rd of September, I would bet we don't call it the 23rd of September. I would bet we call it then Independence Day. So I think it's a matter of luck, of being on a single digit day of a four letter month word. That's why. As a guy who likes compression, and you know, I'm all into algorithms in the last few days since I've been trying to decipher the book of the shooter, I can see this as basically a compression event in human culture. Based says, seems there are things a trailblazer visionary team can create. Some things take an industry, life, as you say. This tells me if this were to be attempted, it must be inserted as an alternative in whatever collapse and they are going to manufacture slash use to herd people in their crap. The Amish may be my test bed. Yeah, definitely. If you want to understand something about a breakaway society, you need to understand what worked with the Amish. And definitely you're going to have to learn from the example. Tillman says, JF, what do you think this guy's IQ is in the video within the first 30 seconds? You are sending me a video with a topless black man. And on top of it, I can't hear the video because of my sound issues from the beginning. So let me fix my sound issues. How would I do that? I think the problem is that I've lost the setting of the default sound issues from the beginning. So okay, here we are. Here we are. We have fixed the sound issue. So I will not show this guy on screen simply because he's topless. I don't like showing topless content in the stream.
The Pikachu one, y'all. So I don't think it's gonna be that loud, personally.
Oh shit. Oh yeah.
So I don't think it's gonna be that loud, y'all. Damn, where the hell am I?
So the black man celebrates receiving a Pikachu via the mail.
My lighter go. Where's my lighter?
He's looking for his lighter.
Where the fuck lighter at? No! Where did I put it? Oh, here we go, right here. Alright! Pikachu!
He's now putting the Pikachu on fire after celebrating the receipt of it. Why does he feel the need to use his lighter to put his great Pikachu? Oh, it's a Pikachu with a candle. It's designed to light up, apparently. Ah! 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 And the Pikachu lighting up leads the topless man to scream like a woman. Well, you're asking me for an IQ evaluation? I don't know, bro. It seems that he has a YouTube career going on, doing crazy stuff, very effeminate in his reaction to the fire. I don't know, bro, maybe 90 IQ. And Mark has sent me a Lauren Chen link. Again, I will not show it on the screen, but it's a topless female with boobs. I mean, I don't even know if that's a female, maybe a trans. But with enormous boobs, walking a little girl in one of these, topless drag queen events. Of course, culture is totally crumbling. I will not show these videos on screen. BJB says, maybe independence doesn't fit in with global slash world government agenda. Yeah, perhaps the word independence is something that the leftists don't quite like because of their federal imperialism. It might be the discomfort at the origin of July 4th being referred to as July 4th. The Highland Park gunman appeared in court today A judge ordered Wednesday shooter Robert Cremo be held in jail without bond after being charged with 7 counts of first-degree murder. We don't learn much from this appearance in court, so there's no news to report. Potential Richmond July 4th mass shooter charged as non-citizens in possession of firearm, police say. One of the suspects in thwarted Richmond mass shooting had previously been deported, so that's one mass shooting that didn't end up happening. It was thwarted before it happened. San Diego loses 22% of its police force due to vax mandates. San Diego is witnessing the largest exodus of police officers from the city since 2009, and the majority of them are quitting because of the city's continued obsession with COVID vaccine mandate. I cannot believe that we're still doing these mandates in face of all the evidence that points to the fact that getting more people vaccinated is not the way you're going to stop the pandemic. The virus will keep circulating. If anything, those people vaccinated may in some window of time be more likely to get COVID. It's absolutely ridiculous in this context that any sort of obligation remains around this vaccine. In fact, it's surprising that this vaccine is still being promoted and offered. Go away says, JF, any thoughts on Jordan Peterson's tweet about Ellen / Elliot Page? Ellen Page was my celebrity wafoo, and I don't think other people can understand the pain that her transition caused for people like me and Jordan Peterson. I don't think that she was your celebrity wafoo. What do I think about this tweet? Well, I've delivered my thoughts in a previous show and on Gab. Basically, Jordan Peterson is a hypocrite of compelled speech. Because there he is saying, oh, nonsense that Twitter tries to compel me to delete this tweet. But he deleted Faith Goldie. So he believes that there are justifications for shutting down the speech of someone else. He believes in being able to pressure so that a speech doesn't happen. It's what he did to Faith Goldie. On the basis of what? On the basis that she, as a journalist, joined a podcast of supposed right-winger or Nazis, or I don't know what it was. And apparently she would not have said anything when something racist was said on the podcast. That's the definition, that's the test case for compelled speech. Are you allowed in Jordan Peterson's world to say nothing? That's the status quo 0 point of the demonstration of whether you can say that you're a warrior for compelled speech. It's that if someone says nothing, like Faith Goldie did, then there's nothing wrong to attack her on. But no, Jordan Peterson said she had a journalistic responsibility not to join this podcast and not to stay there silent in front of the racism expressed by other participants. So Jordan Peterson is one of the few public intellectuals who actually, on the one hand, argues that he's against compelled speech, but also does some compelling of his own. Because when you are Faith Goldie and you're trying to rise as a personality on the internet, and a big guy like Jordan Peterson tells you you shouldn't have remained silent then, you are being compelled. You are being threatened on your business, on your ability to derive income, on your ability to not be canceled. And so Jordan Peterson's mission and is kind of quest on which he is would be absolutely beautiful if it wasn't that Jordan Peterson doesn't believe in it himself, and that actually when it comes to stuff that he cares about, like racism, is as irrational as a Justin Trudeau. So fuck Jordan Peterson. He is part of the very cancel culture that he claims to be a victim of right now. When Jordan Peterson gets me on his podcast, gets Faith Goldie on his podcast, then I'll join his little war for a fairer Twitter. But what Twitter did to Jordan Peterson is exactly what he's done to Faith Goldie. They said, "You're too hot material, Jordan." That's exactly what Jordan said about Faith Goldie. She was too hot material. There was responsibility of her to say things that she didn't say. Well, today that's what Twitter says about Jordan Peterson. That in him misgendering a trans person, he has failed at his responsibility as a public speaker. And therefore he should be shut down. It's like, this is why I broke my ass. I worked hard for years trying to explain to Jordan, true, sometimes 8 hours long show, that you shouldn't undertake an intellectual life with such crappy self-contradictions. You should get this fixed right now so that later your words are worth something. And it didn't happen. He just ignored my comments, ignored my videos. And there we find ourselves with a guy who's arguing for stuff that he's done himself in the past and that he never apologized for. So you want me to talk positively of Jordan Peterson? Have Jordan Peterson invite Faith Goldie on his podcast. Have him apologize to her. And then I'll be enthusiastic about Jordan Peterson, and then I'll consider him a victim of Twitter censorship. Ariel Suarez says, "Have you considered having Faith Goldie in the show again? I don't get much guests anymore, and I don't even know if is Faith Goldie still on the internet. You would have to show me some links. I'm not in contact with her. I don't know what happened with her." Dead Star says, "Spot on, JF. Jordan Peterson is one disgusting contradiction after another." Oh yeah, and we're not even talking about the "I can't do it." I cannot engage on a reasonable question of history. I can't do it. More companies joined the Great Migration to red states amid predictions of a political red wave in the upcoming midterm elections. An economic wave has been building for years with no end in sight as companies flood out of blue states and into red states. I hope that this keeps happening. It's the only positive thing happening in America right now. It's that the communists have not totally taken over everything. And if there's any hope for us, it is in surviving in these well-defended forts away from the communists. It won't last forever, but it can help us sustain a right-wing lifestyle based around the family and based around economic success for still perhaps a generation before our children will eventually have to flee. That is it for tonight, boys. Much love, and I will see you all tomorrow. Thank you.